Upfront and NewFront season continues to roll on in a year that feels particularly significant for an industry so rapidly evolving. I'm Michael Gewertzman, Global VP of Programming at Advertising Week, and this is Upfront Conversations, your insider look behind the scenes of the presentations and announcements that everyone's talking about. And today I'm joined by Chris Rodriguez, the co-founder and chief content officer of Reverie, a trailblazing media network dedicated to celebrating and elevating LGBTQ plus voices and stories across the globe. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. So this year's Reverie's NewFronts have a cabaret theme. Can you just tell us what inspired this choice and just some of the highlights we can look forward to?
I think it was actually our production team. This is the second time we're going to be working with them for the NewFronts presentation. They produced our wildly popular Wizard of Oz themed presentation last year. They all have background in live theater and stage production, so I have to give them the credit for that. But I think this is just coming off of the heels of last year. It's really an ode to Broadway and the fact that we're in New York and that the way we do things is a little bit louder than some other folks. But, you know, that's the way we like it.
Love it. So with prominent figures like Carmen Carrera and Deshaun Wesley featured, what are the unique perspectives that they're bringing to the table for this year's presentations?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's great to be able to have talent from our shows this year. Mm-hmm. That's the one big difference from last year's presentation. So Carmen actually joined our production for Drag Latina last year, which was the second season. She wasn't in the first season, and she's thankfully going to be returning because she was such a hit. You know, she is a fan favorite from RuPaul's Drag Race back in the day, but she has this really great rabid following of folks that just absolutely love her. Plus, she's the perfect demo right now for the show, because what one of the unique things about Drag Latina is that it's English and Spanish production, and this is kind of, she kind of bridges the line between those two communities. It really speaks to the intersectionality of our audience for that show, but our audience in general for Reverie. Deshaun is an absolute legend. So Deshaun is returning for the second annual Pride Ball. This is part of our Ballroom Vogue League. It's called the International Vogue League or the Ivy League. And our first official show will be the second Pride Ball that we're going to be going into production in like a month. And Deshaun is just a legend within the ballroom community. He's known as the King of Vogue. He's the father of the House of Basquiat, which is like in the ballroom world, it's kind of like their teams. And of course, he achieved a lot of acclaim and fame for the HBO Max show Legendary, which was also focused on the ballroom community.
Going really big this year. I love it. So let's talk more about the content. Do you have any exciting updates about Reverie's programming, including Drag Latina, but also Pride Ball, the debut of King of Drag? Any exciting updates that you can share with us?
Yeah, I mean, well, so, I mean, other than the fact that we're going into heavy production season right now, so we are going to be going into production on Drag Latina season 3. And as you may know, we actually won a GLAAD Media Award this year for season 2. It was really great to kind of receive that recognition after all these years being a queer streaming network. So we're going into production on that, Pride Ball as well. And actually, I just got confirmation that it looks like we have 3 sponsors that have signed on for Pride Ball. Unfortunately, I can't share who they are yet, but they are all very major brands that we're just so happy to be associated with. That production is happening in about a month. Pride Ball, like for those who don't know, this is not just a TV show. This is our packaging of ballroom, the art of ballroom as more of a live spectator sports or sport. So we will be doing a live event in Los Angeles for the filming, and then we'll be releasing it probably a week later. And the idea is, as being part of the broader league, we'll be releasing at least one of these specials quarterly for the next every year.
Now, I do want to talk about the collaborations a bit, like LA TV and brand partnerships, and it plays a significant role. So how are these impacting your content development and how you engage with your audience?
We've always loved partnerships. We always say that we've played very well with others. We like to collaborate. We like to bring out the best of both, like ourselves and also our partners, be them companies that carry our channels or companies that we produce content with. Mm-hmm. LA TV was a really great coming together of these different perspectives, particularly for Drag Latina, because LA TV is a Latin-focused streaming network and TV network. And we were really able to come together and create this show that was actually beneficial and worked for both of our audiences. They also have a studio in Culver City that we were able to film in. And there was even some sharing of talent, in particular, Enrique Sapin, who is the host of the Q Agenda on LA TV and was one of the people, he's a dear friend and someone who actually connected us with the company. He ended up being one of the regular judges on Drag Latina. Yeah, I just think that it's good to be to think outside the box when you're thinking about distribution, especially when you're in kind of like a niche community, because partnering with LATV and the fact that they carried the Drag Latina as well, it really added to more recognition for the series, like both within the queer community, but also within the Hispanic community.
I want to go a little more inside baseball, especially within advertising. You've got Prism Riot, which is your advertising network. What sets it apart in today's landscape? And what are some enhancements over the next year that we could look forward to hearing about?
We're always looking towards new innovative ways to deliver ads and to, in a safe and effective way. I can't necessarily speak to some of those things because they're in the process of us unveiling. But look, I think the cool thing about Prism Riot is that we are the only multi-minority certified LGBTQ ad network. And although that's like a mouthful, what it really means is that it allows us to work with brands in a way where we can deliver ads to this hyper-targeted, contextualized audience base. We can follow them off of network to any of their viewing habits on our partners. And we can satisfy diversity budgets for a lot of these brands. A lot of them, you know, they set aside diversity dollars to for targeted communities, be that LGBTQ or Hispanic or Black. And we're able to, just by them working through the ad network, we can satisfy those dollars. But then again, be able to reach them outside of their viewing habits just within our channel. And I think that it's been working amazingly. I can't believe it's been over a year. I think we launched in April 2023, and we've just been seeing such rapid growth, both with the number of households that we're reaching. We're in 110 million US households right now across CTV and multiple platforms. And then we have these amazing partnerships with some of the biggest players in the space. That's everyone from like Vizio Watch Free, to Cineverse, Whirl, 47 Samurai, Philo, Plex. It's insane. I think we really figured out a way to tap into what a lot of these platforms and these brands are looking for. And it's just kind of a quick shop to kind of, you know, be able to target this audience in a really authentic way and through an authentic company.
Well, there's so many different types of these partnerships. So how are you evaluating the success for these partnerships when it comes to your advertising strategies, you know, engagement and the ROI there?
We use brand lift studies with a lot of our partners to kind of be able to show them the affinity that increases when they use our service, when they come to Prism Riot. And we're really, it's thankful that we have this transparency, that we're able to share this data with them in a way where it's just a complete open book. And I think that gives them a lot of assurances that these viewers are real, this is real engagement. It bodes to the fact that we're continuing these partnerships and just signing on new folks as well.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to reaching audiences, I have to think that authenticity is crucial here. So what steps are you taking when you've got these advertising campaigns to ensure that they're genuinely resonating with the community and that the strategies are aligning with the core mission and the values of Reverie?
This is kind of a hot button issue, I think, in the advertising space, particularly when you're dealing with the queer community, trying to target the queer community.
What's controversial about it? Let's just take it step by step first. What is controversial first?
Well, I think the fact that a lot of advertisers think that they have to have creative that focuses on the queer community in order to serve to them. And one of the controversies about that, at least in the past, has been that sometimes they're a little hesitant to do it wrong, right? Everyone's like afraid, they don't want to look inauthentic. But the problem with that is then sometimes it results in folks then just putting it on the back burner, and then years go by and it's like, well, you haven't reached out to the community yet because you're afraid you're going to do it wrong, but you need to just do it, right? And right. And it's not that I don't understand their concerns. I very much do. But that's the great thing about Reverie. And this is what we try to tell a lot of brands who may have a little hesitancy or may have these concerns, is that you don't always need creative focusing on the community. Just the fact that you're on Reverie, that you're marketing on a queer identifying channel, is you reaching out, right? I mean, like in many cases, it doesn't matter. Like sexuality and gender and orientation don't necessarily, you know, matter for a lot of creative or a lot of products or brands. But when they do, again, like our whole thing, Reverie is trying to create a safe environment for the queer community that allows brands like McDonald's and Target and Starbucks to actually, who are all of our clients, to be able to run their ads and be seen by our audience as companies that support the queer community, regardless of what the creative says.
So you think that just putting out the content there within the platform is a better approach than almost forcing it, the logo during Pride Month or something like that, right? Like it's just more associating with reaching out to the communities compared to almost like a fake campaign. Is that what you kind of think?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, we're big proponents of like Pride 365, where it's like reach out all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I mean, it's even sort of thing where it can be a little problematic. If like, what does a queer ad look like, right? Like, what does a queer couple look like? You don't necessarily like want to get into that world. It's actually having Reverie as kind of the again, the safe space for you to run your ads is actually probably the safer option, mm-hmm. not just for the queer community, but for the brand themselves to kind of avoid that conversation.
It's an important note. And I think authenticity is everything. So thank you for that. I hope people are paying attention to it. Now, the streaming world is evolving so much right now and constantly. So how's Reverie adapting the content distribution and engagement strategies just to keep up with something that's shifting, especially this year? I mean, everything is just evolving.
I know. I mean, like even the fact of like Netflix and Disney getting into the Fast game. Yeah. It's fascinating, no pun intended. But no, look, we've only been able to exist to this point because we have been evolving from the very beginning. You know, in case not everyone knows, Reverie has been around since we launched in 2015. So we're going to go on 9 years that the company has been out to market. And, you know, at the time, there were not, the major players were just really Netflix and Hulu. There were very few niche focused streaming services, definitely no LGBTQ ones. Like just the fact of us being like, hey, you know, this is an underserved community. It's a valuable community. I mean, we didn't know it at the time when we launched, but it's like the third largest economy if you like after Black and Hispanic, white, Black and Hispanic. But yeah, and it's and look, there was a lot of naysayers about, will this be able to work? Will you be able to kind of you know, take up some of the market with these big players out there? But look, we really evolving with the times was something that we're very good at. We were very tenacious, even going into the free space, the ad supported space, which we were able to do thanks to a really great LGBTQ inclusive brand, Lexus, who kind of we really like cut our teeth working with brands with them. And I think this was like in 2017, and they allowed us to be able to give this content away for free and be even more innovative. And that was with everything from just running ads to like branded content. Another great partner of ours is McDonald's, who we've had a multi-year partnership with. And at the beginning of our relationship, we pitched them the idea of doing a like kind of an old school variety show, like a music and comedy driven variety show for Pride, as a way to really kind of show their commitment to the community, but also doing it in a way where it's like, this wasn't old school branded content where it's kind of very heavy handed and not very entertaining. It was very entertaining. It was very community driven. We had big queer celebrities like Manila Luzon, Shea Diamond, Kenan Lonsdale, who are all very recognizable in our community. Maybe not in the broader community in all cases, but going back to your authenticity question, that really allowed us to kind of stick to our values in terms of being an authentic queer company, but also do something innovative with a brand that made them happy at the end of the day as well.
Before I look ahead, I want to kind of stay on this for a minute, because you were talking about the launch. Was it a slow burn when you launched, or was it like, did people take to it immediately? It seems like it was a necessary voice in the landscape. I'm curious about like just that first year, the first months, how'd that go?
We've always had really great support from Apple. Like we've had, not initially, but we had the developer story. We were the app of the day. I think that was 2019. And when we first launched, it was Macworld did an article on us that was like basically heralding the launch of the LGBTQ Netflix. I think that's what they said, even though we didn't always like love the association just because the way we distributed was different. But that was very early on. I want to say it was in June. We launched in March 2015, and that was in June, and it kind of exploded. But yeah, it's been a slower burn because the slower burn, though, was largely having to do with more from a technology perspective, because we always wanted to do free distribution. But when we first came out of the gate, there were really only a couple of, unless you like paid a lot to get an independent developer to just like make what you wanted your app to look like, there were only a couple of out of the box options for people who wanted to launch a streaming service, and none of them were ad supported. So we had to go the subscription route, but we always knew that was never our destiny. And then, of course, Lexus came on board, and we were able to figure it out. And then in 2017, we became an early partner to Pluto TV. And this is when they were one of the only ones who were doing FAST. This was, of course, long before the term was coined. But they got us into the FAST game, where it was like it opened our eyes and we're like, hey, me in particular remember being like, this is it. This is the always on environment. It's so throwback, right? It's like what's new is old. Like we're going back to the days of 24-hour TV. But like we could see that this was how we were going to be able to deliver ads and engage people, especially at a time when people were getting overloaded with content. And, you know, I mean, even I still talk about the fact that, you know, the paradox of choice of being like, yeah, we have a lot of options. Even if in one streaming service, you have a lot of options of what to watch, but what do you end up watching? Well, you may kind of give up, right? Like, I'm a big believer in going back to the days where it's the job of the network to curate to the audience, not the other way around. It was a technology thing, right? Even when we had it was just, it took years and years to be able to get to the point where like we could program the way we want to, we could deliver ads the way we want to. But look, we made it, so.
Of course, yeah, and you're crushing it, so it's great. Now you're clearly paying attention to trends in kind of the industry and looking ahead. What are the trends right now that you're most excited about and really kind of keeping a close eye on?
I mean, probably AI. Like, you know, that's always the I mean, AI's, look, here's the AI I'm excited about, but I'm a little anxious about too. I'm definitely following just not necessarily within the industry, but the broader issues around AI. I think it's an invaluable tool for sure. In content creations, it's a great support tool in content creation and even direct to consumer marketing, but it has to be used sparingly, or it has to be used smartly, I should say. Because we're seeing, like, I follow stuff in like the art world and even like the comic book world. There's a lot of controversy with, folks making art that's too reliant on an AI. And then you're losing that, again, that authenticity. It may be beautiful art and maybe even beautiful messaging. But if you really don't have the heart there, it can get a little, it can start looking and feeling a little bit off. It's almost like we're entering that uncanny valley part of AI. Maybe it's a little early, but here's the thing. It's despite all that, it's just sky's the limit in terms of what we're going to be able to do with it. And I'm very excited about how it's going to affect, you know, all like distribution of content, but like creation of content is my biggest thing. Yeah.
Utilization is so important in how people are training it and teaching it and what they're using it for. It shouldn't be that be all end all of content creation, because what it lacks, to your point, is the human experience and the human context, which is why it feels forced and fake and phony. It just doesn't have that life experience. And it's not trained as such unless someone's really focusing very specifically on giving it its own backstory. So I agree with you. It's a very exciting development. Everyone is talking about it. Utilization is really what's super interesting. To close it out, you know, what, when you look back and you're reflecting, What do you believe is the contribution that you would like Reverie to be known for within the media landscape and the impact that you'd like it to have when it's looked back on in the years to come?
I mean, I always say like innovation, like tenacity. I think that like kind of going back to your comment about like whether it was a slow burn, it definitely was, but that was for the like the good of the company. It was also for the good of the founders and the executives, and it was a great learning lesson because it allowed us. It forced us to be very, very creative about the way that we were looking at things, the way we were looking at the industry, even being able to see David versus Goliath kind of positioning as a good thing, because it allowed us to be very agile. It allowed us to shift with the times in ways that some of the bigger companies, even if they wanted to, they couldn't. Just, you know, it's a little bit too cumbersome for them. But I really pride myself and my team. Just FYI too, I am one of four co-founders of Reverie. The other co-founder is Damian Pelliccioni. We have Aaliyah Daniels and LaShawn McGee. And it was really us, especially in the early phases of the company, that despite the ups and downs, that we were able to adjust. And again, I'm a big believer, like back in the day, like a million years ago, I was an art student before I went to law school and all this, I kind of shifted my career focus. But I would always say I would hate the assignments that I would get when the teacher would be like, do whatever you want. Like I hated that because it would paralyze me, but so I'm a big believer in like limitations make freedom. And that's kind of what it was like with our company early on. There were a lot of limitations, but that allowed us to be innovative. It allowed us to really focus on fast. It allowed us to really, to say, you know what, we can make branded content that is long form, engaging, that is interesting to both the advertiser and our audience. And then just being generally adaptive and forward thinking. I mean, even the fact of like the fact that we launched Prism Riot, which in many ways it's its own beast, and it's going to have its own future. And then what we're doing now with the Vogue League, which is like literally, like I said, repackaging something that's existed for a long time within this really dedicated community, but packaging it in a way that we feel like it really always kind of wanted to be, which is sports. And really showcasing it to folks and creating an official league and all that stuff. And look, this is all just kind of the freedom of running your own company where you can do this stuff. And it's scary, but it's also very exciting.
And it's important and meaningful, and you're making a difference, and we're rooting for you. So I appreciate it. I appreciate you joining us today. And we're going to be paying careful attention this year to see everything you've got going for you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me.
Yeah, of course. So that's going to do it for this episode of Upfront Conversations. Once again, thank you, Chris, for joining us. And as always, thank you for listening. And we'll catch you again here next time at the crossroads of content and commerce. Have a great day.